This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show, which is brought to you today by MTN Business. Please visit mtnbusiness.co.za for more on their products and solutions, and we thank them for partnering with Tech Central to bring you these great interviews. My guest in the studio today is the CEO of BMW Group South Africa, Peter van Binsbergen. Peter, welcome to Tech Central. I have to ask you before we even start, petrol head or electron head?
Duncan, thanks for having me here. And I'm a petrol head.
Okay.
But to be honest, as with BMW's technology open strategy, I embrace both technologies. And in fact, I own an i3 as well.
Oh, you do? Okay, good. The i3 is one of the first electric cars launched in the South African market, in fact.
Yeah, it was the pioneer for BMW Group, the i3 and the i8. And it's been around a while and it's still as endearing as it ever was.
Great, great. Well, I have to also ask you, you've been with BMW, I think you've mentioned just now, for over 30 years, 32 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
You must have had the opportunity to drive a lot of BMWs over that time. Can you name your favorite?
My favorite? Probably the M2, because it's so closely linked for me DNA-wise to our famous E30 from South Africa, either the 325iS or the 333i, take your pick. But in size and in configuration, rear-wheel drive, manual gearbox, it's one of the last cars still available with a manual gearbox.
Okay.
So my sort of ideal garage would be the M2 with the i3 next to it.
Very nice. Very, very nice. Good. Peter, there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot happening in the automotive industry globally, but also here in the South African context, there's some issues that are, I think, unique to the South African industry, particularly on the production manufacturing side of things. Yeah. But maybe as a starting point, maybe I could ask you just to give me a broad overview of where you see the state of the local industry. Let's start from an OEM manufacturing perspective. You mentioned you have a plant in Rosslyn. It's been there for many, many years. What's your take on the state of automotive manufacturing in South Africa, and what do you think government could be doing more of to support the industry?
Okay, I mean, it's a very valid question and exactly the right time to be asking it, because I think the industry is at a crossroads right now. If you look at it, we've been here 52 years in South Africa with the plant. That's where BMW started, at our plant in Rosslyn. Many others have been here longer than us. And we've all invested a lot in South Africa in our production network. We just invested recently again for the new X3 and the hybrid in our plant. But what you're seeing in the local market right now is that the market is changing. We're actually seeing a reduction in sales of locally produced vehicles being replaced by imported vehicles, which of course haven't got, let's say, the hurdles we have operating here in South Africa with the production requirements, local content, the likes of, you know, black economic empowerment and employment equity and so on. So we feel we're invested in this country, we're invested in transforming the country and playing a part in the solution. And we feel that the local industry does need a bit of protection, because as you see domestic sales declining or shifting towards imported vehicles, you also see jobs going with those vehicles.
Yes.
So I think that's the one concern we have, is enough being done to protect the industry, to make it robust and future-proof. On the other hand, as you mentioned, we all have plants here, and we also focus on export, right?
Yeah.
And we're not just focused on the domestic market. And we're seeing that the export markets are going more and more electric. Europe has made the announcement, and the UK 2035 is the end of ICE engines in that global area. And we export about 74% of the volume to Europe and the UK. So we need a clear strategy on EVs or NEVs, otherwise we will be left behind come middle of the next decade. And there too, there's been a lot of talk, not enough action. We need a clear policy which will help us transform our local industry to be ready for the new energy vehicle era. And these are the things we're talking about to government. I mean, there's no lack of willingness to discuss and to talk about. We've given them our input as to what we feel we need. But we need decisions now. We need action.
Okay. There seems to have been a lot of talking going on for a number of years.
Indeed.
Are you confident that that you're going to see that policy action coming anytime soon?
I'm not holding my breath, put it that way. We are getting the signals from the DTIC that we will soon see decisions being made and policy put into action. But it's taken a bit too long, to be honest. And so therefore, I'm optimistic, but as I said, I'm not holding my breath.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What would you like to see? I mean, you mentioned fact that sales of locally manufactured vehicles are declining and that imports are on the up. I presume a lot of those imports are coming from China. What would you like to see government doing, first of all, to protect the local industry from those imports? Does this simply mean higher taxes, and does that not then disadvantage consumers?
Yeah, we obviously have to be concerned about the consumer, and part of the growth we're seeing, and we're very open about it at the last NAMSA conference we had, SA Auto Week, we talked about this, that some of these vehicles are being sold in a segment where we don't even produce a car locally for that segment, okay? And even if you look at the likes of VW and Toyota, there's not a vehicle being produced, say, in the sub 300,000 rand category. Mm-hmm. And that's good for the consumer to have access to vehicles like that, so that's not so much an issue. What we'd like to see, though, is we'd like to see that the manufacturers currently entering the country as pure imports mm-hmm. have a greater incentive to actually localize production in South Africa. As you know, we have the SAARM 2035 plan, which is all about increasing production in South Africa, increasing the jobs created, and therefore increasing our contribution to the economy. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to happen unless more manufacturers actually come to South Africa and open plants. The seven OEMs that are here today will never get to that 1% of world production, which is the benchmark mm-hmm. we've set. But they need the right incentives, which is, I think, a combination of, let's say, certain duty structures, but also a very clear framework as to securing, if you do invest in this country, that you can secure your business profitability into the future. And that also includes the NEV policy, to be honest, because that's anybody who invests now will be in business in 10 years' time.
What would you like that policy to say, just at a headline level? What should the government be focused on when it's crafting that policy?
Well, one aspect is definitely, if you've probably heard about it in our discussions in SA Auto Week, the whole use of rebates and how they're being used. At the moment, many of us who export quite a high volume of our production here, we have excess rebates. They could be used by the local manufacturers to make pay certain other taxes, like ad valorem, for example, thereby allowing us to make our prices more stable, let's say, and not having to increase prices every year with inflation. And you've seen that in the last year. In fact, many of us only increased prices by about 1%, whereas inflation's over 3%. So certain incentives that could allow us to plow our rebates back in to local business. Mm-hmm. At the moment, many are selling their rebates because they have excess rebates, and that actually opens the door for importers, obviously, mm-hmm. to enter the market easier. So that would be one aspect which we've proposed. One other aspect would be, of course, for pure importers to have higher duties facing them. So that could be another aspect which would then again raise the hurdle, encouraging importers to come into South Africa. Certain maybe easier entry into the market for production facilities would be helpful. Many countries offer that, certain tax breaks if you open mm-hmm. a new factory, other sort of landing strips to make it more attractive for new producers to come here. But it needs to be a package of items which mm-hmm. in the end protects the consumer, definitely, but also brings jobs to this country. And that's key importance.
Right. The supply chain, obviously, in automotive manufacturing is very important as well. And there's a whole Indeed. Supply chain that is emerged around the automotive plants that have been built in South Africa, and I'm sure there's a supply chain around Roslyn as well. One of the key components in NEVs or EVs is obviously the battery. Does it make sense for South Africa to be trying to attract investment here in battery production facilities, or is that something that you think is always going to be produced overseas?
I think that's jumping very far into the future.
Okay.
I mean, you're starting with the end product, it's the battery. There's many stages before you get to the battery that South Africa could and should be involved in.
Okay.
They call them the precursor stages of battery production. At the moment, none of that happens on the African continent.
And a lot of that involves raw materials, I presume.
Exactly.
Like lithium
and that's where you should start. Start with the raw materials, do the first value-added steps in South Africa, or in Africa, actually, in the free trade agreement zone. And at some stage, you could work your way down the value chain. But to jump to the end of the value chain is a massive leap. Mm-hmm. It's a massive leap in technological complexity. It's also, at the moment, quite a challenge if you think about each manufacturer has a different cell configuration. where you're going to get the economies of scale to open a battery production facility here when we all use different cell configurations at the moment.
Yes.
And that's why over time it could come. But I would say start at the beginning of the value chain, work with our neighboring countries, and do the first steps of value addition. And the important thing is there's a very energy-intensive phases in battery production, the precursor phases. We have lots of renewable energy in South Africa or in Africa, wind and sun. So you could actually make those first stages using renewable energy, thereby making them also clean.
Okay, okay. Your Roslyn plant, what are some of the vehicles that you've made, famous vehicles that BMW has made at the Roslyn plant over the years? What are you making there currently? And I know this is a long question. How do you retool that facility for the new era of EVs?
Okay, so we have a long history, so it's a long answer as well. So since we opened up in 1973, the first odd 20 years we're producing vehicles only for South Africa. So in South Africa, for South Africa, it was really assembly work. So a lot of parts were imported and the cars were assembled here. In that era, we had a huge amount of freedom and we made these iconic halo cars that you referred to, the 530 MLE, 325IS, 333i, 745i, all special cars just for South Africa and in South Africa. Then in the mid-90s, the government came out with MIDP, which was a plan that you actually referred to already, aimed at producing vehicles in South Africa at economies of scale so the suppliers could come to South Africa. Mm-hmm. So we switched from producing everything to just producing 3 Series in the mid-90s. And we did 5 generations of 3 Series, almost 1.2 million cars produced in this country.
Wow.
But by focusing on one model, and by going from 1 shift to 2 shifts to 3 shifts, you get the economies of scale that your suppliers can come on shore. And that's where the jobs are created. The multiplier effect is one job in our factory is probably 4 jobs in the suppliers. Mm-hmm. And that was a really, really intelligent program by the South African government in the mid-90s. It made us all switch our plants to focus on one or two models, depending on how big your plant was, and economies of scale. We did that until 2018 when we switched to the X3. Mm-hmm. Strategic coup, in my opinion, because our strategy guys saw that sedan volumes were dropping in the world, SUV volumes were going up. And with that move to the X3, the previous generation, our plant ran at full production right till the end, right until we stopped production last year to switch to the new X3.
Okay.
So the new X3 went into production in October last year. We produce 20 diesel, 20 fuel, so 20D, 20i. We produce the 30E, which is a plug-in hybrid, mm-hmm. and we produce the 30D, which is a 6-cylinder diesel engine for export. And proud to say, South Africa was allocated the sole production for the hybrid model. So anybody in the world who gets an X3 hybrid, it comes from South Africa.
Amazing. Why did they decide to do that here in South Africa?
There's a number of reasons. One is that the other production facility producing X3 is USA, Spartanburg, mm-hmm. and the hybrid wasn't requested by the US market, so there was no need to tool for that in the US. Mm-hmm. So they allocated it to us because Europe was the biggest hybrid market and we are a big producer for the European market.
Okay.
So it made sense and we're quite thankful for that.
Okay. So did you have to do a lot of retooling at the Roslyn plant to be able to manufacture the hybrid here?
Indeed. Most of the investment went into the electrification of the plant, as we call it. So that's the first step towards ultimately producing a BEV, let's say. So the body shop had to be changed because the body is actually different with the hybrid drivetrain. And remember, we produce all the bodies in one body shop. So if it's a petrol, a diesel, or a hybrid, mm-hmm. we had to make changes to the assembly line because you obviously now have the marriage of the internal combustion engine and the hybrid drivetrain and battery. And then, of course, there was a lot of enabling of our suppliers, a new logistics area because of the battery logistics. You can't fly in these batteries because mm-hmm. of the energy density, so they must be shipped. So you need a completely different logistics chain. A lot of training our employees how to work with high current components and so on. And it was 4.2 billion rand invested in South Africa in the phase of bringing the new X3 into South Africa.
Okay. Okay. Now, BMW talks about the Neue Klasse, I beg your pardon, which translates, I think, in English to new class.
Correct.
This new plug-in hybrid X3 that you're manufacturing at Roslyn, is that a Neue Klasse vehicle? No. Well, so what is Neue Klasse?
Okay, so Neue Klasse.
Neue Klasse, are we
going? Neue Klasse is, I think, a key milestone in BMW's modern history. And, the reason the term Neue Klasse was used, if you look back in history in the 60s, we launched a range of products called the Neue Klasse. And that was a watershed moment for BMW because we brought a complete new design language, a new platform concept, much smaller cars into the market, a new drivetrain concept and so on. And that was actually the core and the root of what we offer today, shared driving pleasure or Freude am Fahren. It came from that Neue Klasse and that reformed our company. It changed totally from that era onwards. In fact, if you look there, the E30's DNA comes out of the Neue Klasse, for example. Okay. Yeah, the first three series we had here in South Africa.
So you're signaling this is a very important shift.
Very important. That's why it got that name, because this vehicle is not just a new platform for BMW, but it introduces a new era of products. It starts with the iX3 that we just launched at the IAA in Munich in September. So it's the electric version of the X3 that we sell here in South Africa, but it's a completely different car. It was designed to be battery electric only. It's produced in a brand new factory, a factory in Hungary, in Debrecen. And it was designed around the philosophy of electric first, digital first, and also part of the circular economy. So a lot of the components can be recycled and so on. So this vehicle is a watershed moment for the company. It brings completely new EV technology to the market, technology that gives us about 30% more range, 30% quicker charging times, but done intelligently, not just by putting a bigger, heavier battery in. In fact, it's got 25% gain in efficiency, and that's where the extra range comes from. And that's obviously key to bringing a product to market that you say is all about being sustainable.
So when are we going to see Neue Klasse BMWs in the South African market? Do you have plans to launch this? Is the iX30?
iX3.
iX3, I beg your pardon. You're going to launch that year?
Most certainly we will be bringing it to South Africa. I can't say exactly when, but it should be on our shores in about 12 months' time. Let's say the latter half of next year.
Okay. Okay. And you have a number of electric vehicles in the South African market already.
Indeed.
What sort of percentage of the mix of your sales are electric at the moment, and how do you see that changing in the years ahead, and how aggressive are you going to be in the local market in selling, let's not say EVs, NEVs, including plug-in hybrids, in the next few years, and how do you see the local market evolving?
NEVs, I think, have their place in the South African market. As you mentioned in our earlier conversation, you know, we launched the concept to South Africa with the i3 in the say mid 2010, so 2015 or thereabouts. And we've continued to prepare the market for NEVs, putting in charging infrastructure, training our people and so on. And we now offer a range of electric vehicles from some electric scooters in our Motorrad brand through to Mini with the electric vehicles like the electric hatch and the Aceman. And then at BMW, we offer from the iX1, which is the small SUV electric, right up to the i7 as pure electrics. And then we also have hybrids in between. We have a hybrid version of the X1. We have the hybrid of the X3 produced here locally, right up to the hybrid 7 series or the XM or M5, in fact, which is also a hybrid. So I think NEVs is part of BMW's offer to the market. You know, we have technology openness, so we believe in continuing with petrol, with diesel, with hybrids and pure electric vehicles. And we're even working with hydrogen, which we could talk about at some stage. But the offer is there and the customer chooses what they want. And I think that's BMW's philosophy. You asked, are we going to be pushing them? I think we make them available. We ensure that our network is there to support the customer and the charging infrastructure is there. And the customer then decide what fits their lifestyle. So the iX3 will come and it will meet a demand. In fact, the previous iX3 was our best-selling EV in the country. It was probably the best selling EV in the marketplace when it was available still until it ran out. So I think it will find its place. But right now, the customer has the choice and chooses what they want. The volume share you asked, we're talking about single digits here, so below 10%. It fluctuates, so you can't really say an average, but 3%, 4%, 5% depending on the month and depending on the products.
How does that compare with, say, Europe?
Much lower. Europe's really double-digit figures, and again, it depends on the market. If you look at the Netherlands or Norway, you're talking about over half the market being electric. You're talking about other countries in Europe, southern Italy, it's completely different. So it's a broad spectrum, which is why I think BMW's strategy for technology openness is exactly the right thing. You know, we offer the platforms, the customers choose what suits their needs. Yeah. Interesting, the hybrid, actually predicted, is much more successful here in South Africa than a pure battery electric vehicle. If you look at the X3 hybrid there, we're over 10% of our mix already being sold locally.
Why do you think that is?
It just... Two things. Firstly, it takes away any range anxiety. Mm-hmm. So,
and there's a particular concern for South Africa, isn't it? Because of the vast distances we tend to drive when we go on holiday, for example. Yeah.
Big country, yeah. Mm-hmm. Still not the charging infrastructure that Europe has. So right. you won't necessarily always find a charge point where you are. And it suits our lifestyle of, you know, we drive a lot in South Africa. We go on holiday in our vehicles. Secondly, many families are one-car families. So you if you're going to have one car, to have a BEV, you're limiting yourself, and therefore the one car is definitely a plug-in hybrid. Mm-hmm. And it suits the person who's ready to transition, because in the week they can commute to work and back fully electric. And on the weekend, if they want to go to the Kruger Park, they fire up the ICE engine and they don't have to worry about range. It's perfect for South Africa,
yes.
Actually.
Yes. Do you think that's a temporary thing, though? Do you think that as people become used to EVs and perhaps start to get over the range anxiety issues that many new EV, prospective EV buyers have, do you think that this market will transition to full EVs, or do you think that PHEVs will remain an important component in the automotive mix in South Africa for the foreseeable future?
I think the market will have a mix of drivetrains long into the future still. As EVs move towards the Neue Klasse platform, 800 kilometers is the maximum range on the Neue Klasse. You can really do a decent trip with that. People will then move more and more towards an EV when it has that kind of range. And then when the charging infrastructure is matched up to the new technologies, then also things will change. If you think about it, the Neue Klasse can charge at 800 volts, 400 kilowatt charging. You can probably add like 320 kilometers in 10 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. If you have that charger. If you don't have that charger, you can't. So once you can match that vehicle technology with that charging technology, then actually a stop for a coffee and a hamburger and your car is full again, the technology can be adopted, I think, also by the one-car households.
We have some of the Chinese OEMs announcing they're going to be deploying EV infrastructure. BYD specifically a few weeks ago has announced that they're going to deploy their new flash 1 megawatt chargers in this country. You've mentioned that BMW has also invested in EV charging infrastructure. How big is your network at the moment, and do you have plans to dramatically expand that in the coming years?
I think on our own, no, because we have a network across the country at all our dealers. We have publicly available chargers at many shopping centers. We've put in charging points and so on. And what I believe that was required in the pioneering phase because, you know, we were pretty early into the market. Yeah. In fact, we were busy installing updated chargers and taking some of the old chargers away because they're more efficient and so on. What's required now, as far as I'm concerned, is an industry approach. And NAMSA is talking about that. Mm-hmm. And we're working with various suppliers to say, let's put in brand agnostic charging, because actually, you know, you don't have petrol stations for each brand. Everybody goes to the same petrol station. We should have everybody going to the same chargers, because then the business case starts to work, you know, that you have one charger being utilized by multiple customers. And then also for the service provider, the business case begins to work. So that's where we're heading to. And we'll be part of a solution, most definitely, but not on our own.
Okay. So there are industry talks going on to do something. Okay. Yeah. Well, watch this space. I must ask you about hydrogen, because you did mention it briefly. And I know BMW has been looking at this. I think BMW and Toyota are the two OEMs that have been very excited about the potential for hydrogen technology. And I know there's a South African connection here as well. You've had one of these, or more than one of these, hydrogen vehicles in the local market. Depending on who I talk to, I get different views on when this will take off, or even if it will take off someday. Hydrogen, do you see this being a mix in commercial sales sometime soon, or is this very much a distant proposition at this stage?
I believe it's a distant proposition, but I also believe it's a very good solution. Mm-hmm. In fact, for Africa, it's a great solution. You need lots of energy to produce hydrogen. We have good renewable energy sources on the continent. You can fill up a hydrogen vehicle like ours in 5 minutes and then do 500 kilometers. Mm-hmm. So it's very much the same experience as you have today with petrol. The challenge is infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, We have electricity everywhere. We have petrol stations everywhere. So those two technologies were pretty easy to migrate to. Hydrogen, you need a complete new infrastructure to actually fill up your vehicles. And once that's there, I believe it will take off. But I think the case, and it's not just me who thinks it, I mean, this is common intelligence, let's say, is that we need the commercial vehicles to adopt hydrogen and to actually put the case in place for a hydrogen infrastructure. And to be honest, electric trucks make no sense because of the size of battery they have to lug around. A hydrogen-powered electric truck does make sense.
And buses and bigger vehicles.
Exactly. So I think if we get the commercial space onto the hydrogen bandwagon, it will come. We brought out our hydrogen X5 to South Africa to prove the case in point together with Sasol and Anglo Platinum. Mm, we went to hydrogen summit in Cape Town and also up here and showed the vehicle. It's a classic electric vehicle when you drive it. Mm-hmm. It's just a fuel cell powered electric vehicle, not a battery powered electric vehicle. Mm. That's the only difference. Yes. Your energy comes through a fuel cell instead of through a big battery. Mm-hmm. But it's a beautiful driving experience. It's clean. But you need green hydrogen to make it really clean.
Yeah. And that could be years, if not decades, before it comes to fruition. Before we wrap, Peter, I just wanted to ask a bit about BMW's IT hub, because I know this is quite an important component of your manufacturing proposition around the world. And I believe that this IT hub is actually integrated into your plant Roslyn operations. Tell me a bit about the IT hub, what its significance is and how it works in the Roslyn context.
Okay, the IT Hub is a IT production house. I think very important is to understand that what it does is it produces software solutions for the BMW Group, exports these solutions and deploys them for BMW in about 100 plus countries worldwide. They work closely with the Roslyn plant and also with us in the sales company because in the end, IT solutions have to serve the customer, right, the user. And of course, it's ideal that you have a plant nearby and you have a sales company nearby and a financial services company in which to test the business ideas and then transfer them to IT. So I think that's of key importance. We have a few campuses where they're housed. Menlyn, Maine is the biggest campus. Near Pretoria, we have them on the Midrand campus, and they also have a part of the IT hub in the plant, in fact. And they produce software solutions for production, for all the sales and finance processes in our sales companies, and even for in the vehicle, so the full value chain. And the plant here, or the IT hub here in South Africa, I think is a source of innovation for the BMW Group. They're working with a very interesting innovation that they developed together with Amazon Web Services, where they look at a visual and acoustic data coming out of the plants. So they capture around about a million images a day, analyze them with AI, and thereby manage predictive maintenance, quality, and efficiency of processes within the plants. And this is all run, the AI done together with Amazon Web Services here in South Africa by the IT Hub. And the IT Hub actually, you know, oversees operations of the plants that are English and German speaking, and I think also Spanish speaking here out of South Africa. So they have a massive control room where they're observing all the IT systems in the plants and keeping them on the health level. So the green lights is what you want to see. And if they see there's a problem, they notify the plant to take a look, or the plant calls them and they help them solve their problems. So it's on the one hand operational IT, but on the other hand developing innovations, and AI of course being an area of key innovation is one of the focus points of the IT hub here in South Africa. We can be really proud to have them here.
Okay. It's quite amazing to see how tech infused the motoring industry is becoming. In fact, you're sitting here talking to a tech publication. Self-driving cars. I was watching Jensen Huang from NVIDIA's keynote last night, where he was talking about the future of motoring and self-driving cars and you know, how AI is going to be making all sorts of decisions on the roads, life and death decisions on the roads in future. Do you think the motoring industry is kind of becoming like the tech industry, or do you think BMW is becoming a technology company? Or do you think it always has been?
I think we always have been. In the era in which we were at that stage, we were a technology company in that era's, say, leading edge of technology. We've become much more an IT company over the years, most certainly, because IT pervades every area of our business, and especially the vehicles. You look at the amount of control units in a vehicle nowadays. But even if you go back to the 7 Series we produced the first here in South Africa, that vehicle was already had more computing power than the first satellite that went, or the first rocket that went to the moon. So our cars have always been, I think, ahead of other industries when it comes to the technology in the vehicles. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, where do you see a lot of our technology shown for the first time at the CES in Las Vegas?
Yes,
right?
Indeed, yes.
And that's not a car show, but mm-hmm. we're very present there. And in fact, the operating system that comes in the Neue Klasse, mm-hmm. This panoramic iDrive, was first shown at the CES.
Okay. Mm. Okay. Fascinating. And no doubt the pace of change is accelerating rapidly in this industry. I mean, you have to be on top of your game. Otherwise, someone is going to pull ahead of you within a generation of vehicles.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
It's been a pleasure hosting Peter van Binsbergen, CEO of BMW Group South Africa. I'm Duncan McLeod for Tech Central. So Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Duncan.
My pleasure. Thank you.